Good evening. I'm Representative Peter Fisher. I'd like to call to order this first meeting on the Legislative Commission on Housing Affordability. We do have our agenda set. We're probably going to have a little variation on it because I noticed that we're still missing a couple people from the Senate. And so what I'm going to suggest at this point in time is we'll start off, as we're suggesting, on doing welcome and introductions of those that are here. If we don't have some others from the Senate here by that point in time, we'll then roll right into the presentation from the person on the governor's task force, because I'd like to be able to have at least one more person from the Senate here before we start approving rules and officers and that type of thing. So if everyone would like to indulge me, I'd like to then go ahead and start with the welcome introductions. And what I'd like to do is start with Senator Housley here. If you want to introduce where you're from, a little bit of the background is what your interest is and what you're thinking of as we're going forward.
Thank you, Representative Fisher, and thank you, everybody, for coming. I am Senator Karin Housley. I represent Senate District 39, which is Stillwater, Forest Lake, and the surrounding St. Croix Valley. I'm representing the Senate. Just recently coming off the Senator Dreheim's Committee on Housing Affordability and Ownership and learning a bunch through that process, I have a background in real estate. I have a real estate business out in the St. Croix Valley. And so working with the House and you, Representative Fisher, is going to be a lot of fun and hearing from all of the folks around Minnesota to see what we can do to address this crisis.
Awesome.
So, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And we'll start on the far side over here with Representative Haley.
Thank you. Representative Barb Haley, I represent 21A, which is Red Wing, Cannon Falls, Lake City, Wabasha, and Goodhue. Interested in this topic as it affects my district. Interesting statistic. We have over 10,000 people that commute into the Red Wing area every day to work, and I would love to see those folks actually live in the Red Wing area and shop in our quaint downtown and put their kids in our schools. And as a border community, we have some unique issues and concerns related to housing costs as well. So I'm very pleased to be part of the task force, eager to learn and participate, and hopefully we can all make an impact for the whole range across the spectrum. You know, workforce housing, affordable housing, first-time home buyers, just went through that process with my son, all the way up to seniors that are looking for housing. So thank you for having me as part of the commission.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. My name is Jim Nash. I represent District 47A, which is all the good parts of Carver County. Well, there are other good parts. But so I represent routinely one of the largest or the fastest growing parts of Minnesota. If you've watched the news, you've seen that Carver County is routinely found to be the fastest growing, the happiest, the healthiest. So we're doing everything right. But when I was mayor in the city of Waconia, I noticed a couple of things that I have carried with me here to the legislature, which was when we as the city made an intentional effort to get out of the way of builders and realtors and businesses, our community thrived and grew. And that's my perspective that I bring to this, is there are problems that we're seeing. The solution, or one of the solutions, and Representative Fisher, you've heard me liken this to an equation. There's lots of different integers that we all remember. Remember your collegiate math, everybody. There's a large equation, and there are integers in the equation that we have to solve along the way. Some of them I remember that I just hated them. I'm like, oh, that's a stupid integer. I don't like that. Well, it doesn't mean that we don't get to address them. It has to be a part of the solution. And as we go along, we have to show our work. And what I'm hoping is that we come together and realize that there are impediments that we can help remove along the way. And we have to spend some time looking at the issues and remembering that Minnesotans are depending on us because, and I use this example when over Christmas, my oldest son came home and we were sitting around the kitchen table, my wife and I and his, I believe, soon-to-be a fiancé, were there, and he said, Mom and Dad, I appreciate knowing that this house and our home is always here, that you guys are constant, that it's sort of like our North Star, that he can be out in the woods in Montana doing his lumberjack thing, and that he knows that this place in Waconia, Minnesota is home, and that it's there. And I want to make sure through our work here that we can do the same for other families who are trying to create that North Star moment, as James called it, that we understand that there are people that want to build a starter home and start their family and grow into that because it creates constancy, reliability. It creates a healthy family environment. They contribute to their community. So all the things that we talk about as we're out campaigning and all the things that we appreciate about our communities, well, all of those typically come from people who have the stability of a home. And we've got to do our level best to make sure that they can. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure this will be bumpy at times, but it's important enough that I've volunteered to take on yet another thing to both serve in the legislature, do my job full time, and now I'm doing this because it's important enough to the people who want to be future Minnesotans and have their own North Star. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. So my name is Representative Kalee Herr, and I represent 64A, and that's in St. Paul here. I represent the neighborhoods of Summit Hill, parts of Crocus Hill, Lexham neighborhood, Mac Groveland, Merriam Park, Midway, St. Anthony Park. And so I'm a number of neighborhoods. If you're not familiar with St. Paul, I'm sorry. It's the only way I can describe it because I don't have a region, actually. So, and thank you for all being here tonight. I'm really excited to be a part of this commission or this group. I feel very passionate about housing. I do sit on housing policy and finance. And you know, many of you who have been in that have heard me tell my story about how where I am today is not by accident. It's because my parents were able to afford a home, to buy a home our first year after coming to this country as refugees, that laid the foundation for my siblings and I to be able to obtain education, to be able to have security in our life, even when we didn't have food to eat and we didn't have you know, we were barely able to, my father was barely able to make the rent. We still always had housing, and that's what created the stability that allowed us to become four engineers and two people who worked in business and now a state legislator. And so that didn't happen by chance. It happened because of the housing that we had. And so I'm really appreciative of the opportunity to be on this commission and to work through some of the issues that we'll be discussing and how we're going to make it so that housing is affordable for anyone who wants to own a home. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Representative Herr. Senator Dietzick was not able to be here this evening. She wants to let people know she represents East Minneapolis. She's currently the minority lead on ag and housing. She's been working on housing issue on a variety of levels while she's been in the legislature. One of her concerns or things that she looks at is the lack of affordability is the biggest in her district, so she's looking forward to working with the group to attempt to help increase safe, affordable housing for Minnesotans. And then myself, I represent District 43A. Those are the communities of Maplewood, White Bear, Montemedi, Willardney, and Birchwood. Part of my background, and this is part of where I've kind of ended up taking more of an interest in housing, is over a number of years while I lived in Maplewood, my mother used to chair the HRA Maplewood and the Planning Commission, so I got a very early introduction to housing issues when I was still in high school. And for the last 12 years, I worked at a homeless youth shelter in North Minneapolis. So I've really seen what the youth go through and how there's a lot of difference in the racial disparities. I've seen how sometimes youth that we've worked with on a regular basis, the hurdles that they have to overcome versus people that are in my district don't have those same issues. And you know, and I know that's some of the things that other people have looked at, too, is trying to figure out how do we do a better job of addressing that as we're looking at the overall problem. But I'm very encouraged and looking forward to working with everybody. I think there's going to be a lot of common ground as we go forward on the things that we're going to have a full agenda as we move forward. So at that point, we will take a pause. I don't see anyone else here from the Senate yet. So what we'll do is we will jump to the presentation on the governor's task force. So we do have a person here who will be presenting to us, and that would be Stephanie Brown from Prosperity's Front Door. Stephanie, from my understanding, was very involved with the governor's task force. As I also know, Senator Dreheim, who's not here currently, was also on the Governor Dayton's task force. So thank you for being here today. Thank you for being willing to come in and to make the presentation today. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself and start the presentation, that would be great.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So as Representative Fisher said, I help support and work on the Governor's Task Force on behalf of the McKnight Foundation and the ITASCA Project. and I'm here tonight representing Prosperity's Front Door, which is an effort that was created to really carry on the recommendations of the task force as a public and private and nonprofit coalition effort. And so it is really exciting to us to see that you guys are continuing to build on this work. So tonight I want to cover a few things. One, what was the task force? What did it look at? What are the core trends that were identified, the recommendations? And then I wanted to go ahead and preview for you, Prosperity's Front Door will be releasing tomorrow, actually, a scorecard on how we have done since the task force. And I felt like if anyone should see that ahead of time, it was all of you. So I'll go through some of that and try and make sure I leave time for questions as well. So the task force convened in early 2018. It was a bipartisan effort, public and private, deliberately created of members from around the state, 28 people in all. They met over 30 times over 6 months, solicited ideas for the public, and also held 8 public forums all around the state to really generate community feedback, community input. And one thing we heard clearly throughout was that different communities have different challenges and require different solutions. And so the breadth of work really tries to acknowledge that. The task force set a vision, which I feel is really worth reading out, which is that every Minnesotan has a place to live in a thriving community, and that livability remains a hallmark and competitive advantage for our state. Through collaboration, creativity, and effective investments, we will build Minnesota's future together and share in its prosperity. I want to walk through, and I'll try to move quickly since I know you know much of this, but walk you through some of the data the task force looked at. So first, over the last 20 years in Minnesota, incomes for both renters and homeowners have remained effectively flat. Home prices have not. As a share of our GDP, as a share of every household's budget, home prices have continued to rise. This has increasingly hit middle, moderate income families. Families that are making below $20,000 or $35,000 a year have always been very strongly hit by the cost of housing. Cost burden households are those who pay more than 30% of their income in housing. But we're seeing that families who make between $35,000 and $75,000 a year, that 2 and 3 times as many families are now cost burdened as were just 5 years ago. And when a system is strained, the burdens are going to hit most heavily, as it so often does, on households of color, so in home ownership, in the rate of cost burden, and in homelessness, there are deep and present disparities that need to be addressed for our state. We are starting to build more, which is exciting to see, but as we build, we are building increasingly towards the high end of the spectrum. If you look at this chart, the gray bars are the needed distribution of homes, so the different price points that we would need to see to meet where our residents can afford to live. The blue bars are what we're actually building. The cost of housing, the cost to build has gone up, and as a result, the construction we're seeing is at the high end of the market. It's important to remember in all of this that we are still working to overcome a period of not building that followed the recession. If you look at this chart, we were building in 2004 at very high rates, and at 2009, we were building a quarter of that level. And so what that did is it created a backlog in the system, about 52,000 homes short of what we needed to have a healthy market. That's both in home ownership and in rental, and it takes time to build our way out of that. So there were 6 goals that the task force set, and I'll walk through each and do a bit of a status check on them. The first goal was really to commit to homes as a priority. This commission is a manifestation of that. Increasingly around the state, people are talking about housing as the biggest ticket item for our families, as what determines where you live, what schools you go to, how you reach your job. All of these aspects of our lives are driven by housing, and so we really want to see it as a priority to increase the focus. Second, these next 2 recommendations are really focused on where we live. So one is preserve the homes we have. The most cost-efficient way to have an affordable unit is to keep the ones we already have that are affordable. It costs far less to maintain those units in decent quality and at affordable rental prices than it does to build a new subsidized unit. So how can we preserve what we already have in the system? The third goal is to build more homes. We set a goal to build 300,000 homes by 2030, and that is enough to keep up with population growth, with household growth, and also to address that 52,000 home backlog. And that's what you need to do to stabilize the market. It is hard to address any of the underlying issues in the system if you can't first stabilize the supply and demand crisis. Fourth, the recommendation was to increase home stability. You mentioned constancy and stability in your recommendations, and it truly is in your introductions, and it's truly critical. If you are not sure that you're going to be able to pay the rent, if your kids aren't sure they're going to have a safe place to sleep, what do they do? How can you maintain the rest of your life? So we saw rental assistance, addressing evictions, tenant protections. There's a whole range of recommendations under there that are critical. Fifth recommendation was to link homes and services. The most effective services are provided where people live and where people are. This is partly about making sure that people have a place to stay first, that services can be offered to them, but also when we think about our senior citizens, who we know we will have more and more senior citizens in the state of Minnesota. Surveys tell us that 70% of seniors would prefer to age in place. That is hard to do if you cannot get effective medical care and other supports throughout your life. So how can we create systems that work for our seniors? And then sixth and finally, support and strengthen home ownership. And specifically, the task force wanted to call attention to the racial disparities we have in the rates of home ownership in our state. 68% of a household's average wealth comes from the value of their home. It is your retirement account, it is your savings. But we have one of the largest racial gaps in rates of home ownership around the whole country. And that has long-term ramifications. I want to jump into, I'll go through each of these and do a little bit of a status check, and then reserve most of my time to answer any questions you might have on the specific recommendations that the task force made. So first, commit to homes as a priority. We really see this has been a great success over the past year and a half. Momentum has increased. There's been new attention, new levels of investment at state levels, new task force that have been set up at local levels. Chambers of commerce and business organizations have leaned in more heavily. There's still more to be done, of course, but this is an area to celebrate. Preserving the homes we have continues to be a challenge in an area where we are actively losing ground. The market has not yet stabilized, and every year it doesn't stabilize, we lose affordable homes. There are some really innovative investments around, these homes are often referred to as naturally occurring affordable housing. That means they're just on the open market, but they are affordable to people at moderate or low incomes. Those homes are disappearing, and there are interventions to save them, to put them in the hands of community-minded buyers, to look at land trusts, to look at rehab funds, but it's challenging to do. We've seen that from 2013 to 2017, we lost 50,000 of those units. Those are either rental units that are $1,000 a month or less, or homes for sale at $250,000 a year or less. So adjusted for inflation, we're still losing those numbers, and that's statewide. So you can imagine that in certain parts of our state, that is most of the housing stock, and it continues to be a challenge. Goal three, this one is really about the supply and demand crisis, and there is a lot to celebrate here, but more to look at. So that chart that I showed earlier with the declining rates of building and the shortage, our estimates are that this year we actually hit 30,000 units over the year in the course of construction, and that's enough to begin to tackle that backlog. It means we built more than we had to do for population growth, and it takes about 5,000 off of that 52,000 number. So real progress and something to celebrate. However, as we said earlier, those buildings are still at the higher end, and so figuring out how to make sure we're building for all price points is truly critical. On increasing home stability, here, we've seen some evidence that eviction filings have declined, and evictions have declined for Minnesota. That data is admittedly challenging to get at a statewide level, and so this likely underreports some of what we see. We also know that people are often informally evicted, so before any legal proceeding is filed, they choose to move because they feel they have no other options. Still, this is something, an accomplishment to build on. And there are a lot of new tenant protections that are being explored, particularly the local government level, that are worth celebrating. Linking homes and services. So this goal of building links between where we live and the services we need. Progress there is real but still slow. So there are new efforts to link healthcare dollars to housing, and that is meaningful. However, we have seen the rates of people experiencing homelessness rise in the past year alone by about 10%, which remains a deep source of concern. And then finally, around supporting and strengthening home ownership, there are some troubling indicators that foreclosures have actually started to increase. But more importantly, what we wanted to call attention to is that home ownership gap that I mentioned earlier just continues to persist. It's not something that we have made any meaningful progress on in the past year, but frankly in the past decades. And so we'll require ongoing focus. The recommendations there looked at down payment assistance options, financial counseling, what could be the role of employers, what are some alternative forms of wealth building, all important to explore. And I will stop there and answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Brown, for the presentation. So we'll open up to questions at this point. I do not know. I've got a couple of questions, but I'd like to let others start off first. Do you?
Oh, I always have questions.
That's why I was looking at you, Representative Nash, if you'd like to go ahead and start off.
Well, thank you, and welcome to Senator Dreheim. Did you want to pause and let him do an intro, or?
Sure.
Okay.
We can do that. Senator Dreheim, we had everyone else give just a short intro about themselves, where they're from, and also their interest for being on here.
Thank you, and I apologize for being late. I was in another meeting. I'm Senator Rich Dreheim. I represent most of the Sewer County, part of Scott, and part of Rice counties. I have a real estate development company based out of Mankato. I've done some development and of course, a ton of real estate. I have about a dozen agents that work for me, so we touch all kinds of real estate transactions. I've been very passionate about housing since I've come to the Senate. I guess I've been one of the loudest voices on trying to think outside the box a little bit. We do a lot of great things here in Minnesota, but I don't think we've moved the needle much, especially in some of the slides we just saw there. And I appreciate the presentation on that. I was on the governor's task force, so I did get to live and breathe that. It was a great exercise. A lot of good information came out of that, so I am appreciative of that. But I'm happy to be here, and once again, I apologize for being late.
Well, thank you. Thank you for making it. So, Representative Nash, we'll zip back to you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Fisher. So, to the testifier, something you said in your intro was that in that $250,000 price point, and a good portion of my district has had those price points at one time or another, and we'd like to get it back. What are some of the things that I'm looking at the governor's report? Chapter 3 seems to take a pretty good swing at that, or goal 3, I guess. But what are some of the things that you've observed watching this over time and discussion that you think is causing that $250,000 price point as being unachievable for, I guess, builders or the community to have those in their community, if you would?
Ms. Brown.
Yeah, so there are several different dynamics there. One, land costs have gone up. Two, perhaps a greater share, construction labor costs have gone up, partly when we stopped building. Stopped is an exaggeration, but significantly slowed building. A lot of people left the construction industry or chose not to enter the construction industry. And so there is a shortage of skilled labor at a time when we also have roads and bridges that need to be repaired. We are also making massive investments in solar energy. All of these require skilled construction labor, and so housing is competing with that same pool. So that's a significant cost driver. Materials costs have gone up as well, though that's not as much of a share of the overall cost to construct. So we have a couple of different options when it comes to solutions. One is, and the reality is, people will build where the more, it doesn't cost that much more to build a, particularly when it comes to apartments, a luxury apartment versus a moderate apartment. The actual cost to construct doesn't change that much. And so it is very natural that builders who have had a long period of time where they haven't had flush opportunities will look to build at that higher end of the market where there is a lot of pent-up demand. So we may see some of that start to change as we begin to stabilize the market and prices or new apartments naturally fall to other price points. But we can also look at some of the fundamental costs. So how do we regulate our land and what does that do to increase the cost? What are, I know there's been a conversation about fees and permits and understanding where those drive cost is important. There's also the first recommendation in Goal 3 was to really look at advancement of housing innovation technology, and that's advanced manufacturing techniques. That is a tough nut to crack, but if you did it, you actually have the potential to change some of the fundamental calculation, as you put it earlier, of what it costs to build. Which is a great opportunity, but it will take real concerted effort from multiple sectors to make it happen.
Okay. Representative Nash.
And thank you again. I want to call you Mr. Chair, but we haven't gotten to that yet. Thank you, Representative Fisher. Ms. Brown, I was intrigued. Again, I'm on page 23 of the report, talking about how as little as $1,000 increase in a price of a home can remove at time of publication, 2,800 people from the pool of available buyers. I think that's stark, and that's concerning. And of the things that I've been talking about, one of them has been fees and various permitting fees and so on. And I know that the study did tackle that, but could you give us an idea based on what you've seen as to what the impact of local fees from some municipalities have done to the pool of available houses for those available buyers?
So it varies. Our recommendation was in general to take a thorough evaluation. We did not feel that the task force had the time to go in depth on those specific regulations. So it is looking at code, looking at local fees. I think when it comes to local fees, the challenge is those fees are also often going to critical services and other things that we value, and so there's a trade-off to work through in terms of what drives those costs. Some of the land costs are driven more by regulation than overall fees. So I think it's worth a comprehensive look. The task force did not have the chance to go in depth enough to identify this fee should change, this code should look different, but saw enough testimony to feel it was worth an examination.
And then lastly,
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. So I also wanted to go staying in Chapter 3, but heading earlier, you talked about the lack of or the low number of skilled laborers. And Representative Fisher, I would like to add this as one of the things that we do look at is, it seems like forever ago, but 2 years ago, Representative Haley and I and a number of others around a bill that I authored, we called it VPSEO, so Vocational Post-Secondary Education, where we encouraged people who were in high school to look at the trades as a really good way to have that fantastic living. And I think that if we want to look at how do we change the dynamics of this problem that we're all agreeing exists, to your point of that competition for skilled workers, you know, I have six kids, and not everybody in the room knows that. Some do, and they always shake their head. But what I know is that not every one of those kids even has gone to college. I have my second oldest, who is a Navy corpsman, and he recognized early on that going to college was just not in the cards at that point for him. And I think that if we're going to have a hard look at this, that's something that we need to look at. And forgive me for getting a little preachy, and I'll, and Representative Haley will jab me in the ribs when I get too far down the road, but I think we've taken our focus off of the honor of working with your hands. We've as a society allowed ourselves to think that everybody has to go to college. Part of the problem that's articulated in this report is a byproduct of not having people who feel that it's an honorable job to go and work in the trades. I think that we need to make that easier. So if we want to have a widely available labor pool, then we should encourage them down into the middle school and early parts of high school. So I think that that was a very interesting read when I was reading the governor's report. And to me, it seemed like an easy fix of let's just back the labor pool truck up a little bit and get people who are exposed to that early on thinking, when I graduate high school, I can have a great job, no college debt, and by the time I'm in the job for a number of years, I'm making a really good living. So is that kind of where the governor's...
Specifically recommendation 3.2 is focused on growing the pool of talent and attracting people to that industry. There are also, I think, overlaps with 3.1 because part of the challenge of the construction industry is it is seasonal, and that does not work for every person and every family. It's not all seasonal, but enough of it is. If it were possible in Minnesota to move more of our construction into an off-site factory setting, you could potentially remove that seasonality, improve working conditions. Factories that have done this have seen significant increases in the role and the participation of women in the construction industry when that change can happen. So there are some interesting possibilities there as well.
I didn't know we had adverse weather here in Minnesota.
It's a shock, Representative Nash. I'll let you continue.
Well, I don't want to waste or to use up the time of everybody else, but I think that there are some things that based on the report, we need to focus our attention on. The report articulates the impact of fees. And that's, as you know, Representative Fisher, one of the things that I want to talk about. But the education piece, I am wildly in favor of talking about how do we innovate material and how do we use more of a modular approach to building some of the homes, because then you can work indoors, as you were just alluding to, over the course of the brief winter that we have here in Minnesota. So thank you.
Heard a rumor.
Okay. Very good. Other questions that people might have? I know. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, Representative Haley.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Can you add some more detail when you commented about land costs and that land costs in Minnesota being higher? But then you referred to, is it actually the land costs or the regulation around how we permit the land? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
It's both. The actual cost of land for a project, depending on where you're building, is going to be 15 to 20% of the project. I think the average overall is around 16%. The cost of land is driven by supply and demand, as so many things are. And so where the supply of land is constrained because of different requirements on what you're allowed to build or where you're allowed to build it, that drives up the cost. Land is finite, and land in valuable locations is even more finite. So there is something that it's simply the market price tag of the land includes a lot of assumptions about how that land can be used. And so the most valuable parcels are the most expensive. There is an additional sort of permitting cost to administer that land, different fees that have been attached to housing, and that can be part of the cost as well. That is part of the soft cost as a project, but the land cost itself is generally higher than the aggregate cost of the fees.
Representative Haley?
Harder to
yes.
Thank you. So the fees that you're talking about or the structure around the permitting, you're alluding to them, we need to look at how local municipalities regulate and how they monitor the industry or how they regulate the industry.
Ms. Brown.
Is that correct? Is
yeah,
that a correct
so
assumption?
I'm more acknowledging that we need to look at all aspects of cost to get it down effectively. Local municipalities will have to explore different solutions for what works for them. A lot of municipalities have been able to identify strategies where they waive costs for affordable housing, where they waive different fees to enable the types of development they want to see. So it's not necessarily blanket, but it's targeted in the way that works for that community. You also have new looks at zoning and density and how to explore that creatively, is how you say that word, in order to drive down that land cost. So at the state level, there's also building code costs with different regulations around what needs to be included in different standards. Again, many passed for very good reasons, but it is always worth taking a look at that and making sure those are still what we need.
Thank you. Can I ask make another comment?
Please go right ahead.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. And just related to what Representative Nash said about workforce, maybe I can add a little more background. And I think it is important that we connect the dots between how we fund higher education and what we do in the K-12 on this issue. We had another two bills that passed in the past two sessions, one on the higher ed side, workforce development scholarships. And we focused that money on key industries where we know the state needed workers. And so that's an area where we have a funding stream already, and we could particularly just point the needle at construction. We have trades. Last session, we added daycare, for example. So we added scholarships for early people that want to, you know, be preschool teachers. So that's something that we could take a look at. And related to the youth skills training grants, those were particularly to get high school kids age 16 onto advanced manufacturing sites. Construction is not part of that grant right now. We're working with the Department of Labor and Industry on how we could do that. But again, we have an avenue there. It's been a very successful program, and we could look to align that so we could expose more kids to the industry.
Very good. Other questions? Representative Herr.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Ms. Brown, can you just explain, maybe just give us like a rough estimate, because I know we're talking a lot about fees, but can you tell me, in general, what is the percentage the cost of building a home is fees versus labor versus materials?
Ms. Brown.
Yeah, so it genuinely varies based on what you're building and where, so I'm a little wary of giving an answer, but soft costs of a project are also sort of 15 to 20. It's just that that's not all fees. Mm-hmm. So if you've got 15 to 20% of the cost is land, 60 to 70% is generally the hard cost of construction. That's your labor, your materials, all of that. The remaining gap, that 15 to 20% depending, is your soft cost. That's your architecture, your engineering fees, your legal fees, some of the financing pieces. And by fees, I don't necessarily mean state-imposed fees. I mean the cost of your architect, your engineer, and your financing, as well as any permitting fees or city project fees you may have to pay. Some municipalities have placed greater fees than others based on the priorities they were setting.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. And just a quick follow-up, because I think that this fee conversation is really important, and I think that in order for us to have a meaningful conversation about that, it is really important for us to actually know what cities are charging in fees. And in some of the research that I've done with Shakopee, St. Paul, and Woodbury, that those fees actually come out to be quite small, single-digit small. And so I would just want to make sure that we're really having meaningful conversations around this, because finding $1,000 in a really small fee is actually much more difficult than finding $1,000 when a cost is 70% is in other areas. And so I want to have meaningful conversation around this and make changes where changes can be it can actually be really meaningful. So I would love to have that conversation around fees as well, Representative Fisher, and really understanding what that does make up and finding that $1,000 or 2,800 more people can be qualified or have opportunity to that home is really important, and we need to really look at where the greatest impact will be with that. So I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Question I have for you, Ms. Brown, it looks like everyone else has had been able to hit theirs out there, is going to the section about preserving the homes that we have. One of the things that I've seen, and I didn't really see a way to hit at that problem with what you had here, is in North Minneapolis, I know there's been a large number of homes that have been bought up by large corporations from around the country who then rent them out at prices that are almost twice what you would pay for if you were owning that home. And I'm seeing the same thing spreading out in my community. I was out with my daughter looking for townhouses for her, and in that $250 range or less, there were some instances where as soon as the house was listed, within 4 to 5 hours, it was sold as cash was paid across the barrelhead. And yeah, it's kind of hard to keep rent available, affordable when you're in that type of situation. Did you folks take a look at that much or see how that might be playing out at all?
We did, and I certainly know it's real in my own life. The apartment building two doors down for me increased the rents by 70% on tenants after a sale to a out-of-state company. So these things are real, and they do happen. What we looked at in particular are how to revamp, expand, and make more effective some of the rehab programs that would allow existing homeowners to rehab their units and stay. That matters not just for that family, but for the person who buys the house next. Because if the house is allowed to deteriorate, then it is likely to be torn down rather than sold at a moderate price point. This is really true for apartment buildings as well. And so where can owners of multifamily units get some investment funds, perhaps with conditions around affordability attached to them, that mean that building stays in good enough shape that it doesn't need to be ripped down and then replaced with something that will be much, much higher. So that is part of it. Also, how can you look at properties that are going on the market, potentially enable nonprofit buyers to buy those properties, maintain some affordability provisions on there? It is cheaper to buy those units than it is to build new ones. And then there are some interesting steps that we looked at. For example, in Minneapolis, they have expanded the 4D tax credit to existing homeowners that can then take landlords who can take a discount on their property taxes in exchange for holding rents at a certain level. I think the increase can be no more than 6% annually. It is an opt-in program, but it is a tool that they are using to preserve some of that affordability. So there are several ideas. We are happy to provide more information.
Okay, well, thank you. And I don't see any other questions, Ms. Brown. Thank you for taking the time for being here today and making the presentation and be able to do it on just a few days' notice. So thank you very much. We appreciate it.
We will make sure that we send the scorecard to you. One thing Please. It has is stories from around the state, which could prove some more.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Next item we have on the – what we'll do is we'll move back onto the agenda. We haven't adopted commission rules yet or elections of officers. In your packet, you will find a list of proposed rules, and these are modeled as to what we have used in other groups. And one of the things that we're kind of looking at in here and structuring our group as we're going forward is using some of the same rules and guidelines that we used on the Legislative Commission on Water. I know Senator Draheim, and I've served on that for quite a while, and it's helped us tackle some very tough issues in a way that we're able to do it, in a way that we can get to the heart, hear from everybody, and come up with some good bipartisan legislation to address the issues facing out there. So one of the things that we're looking at right now is that the list you have in front of us are the rules that we've got proposed. One of the big things that it's looking at is having co-chairs, and that the gavel would basically switch from meeting to meeting. It would have one person from each body, and then also making sure that we have one person from each party. And so at this point in time, I would open up for discussion and then for approval of the rules. Questions? Hearing none, would anyone like to move the approval of the rules as presented? Representative Nash.
So moved.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the rules as presented, signify by saying aye.
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 Nays? Motion approved. We now have a set of rules. Now we are on to appointing officers. I know that I've talked to folks on both sides. I know that Senator Housley has expressed interest in willing to do it from the Senate side. I would be willing to do it from the House side. So we would need someone to make a motion or to offer another slate.
So moved.
And Representative Nash, you're moving the slate of Housley Fisher?
Correct.
Okay. Second. And it's been seconded. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the slate as presented, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion approved. Now we have chairs. So thank you. We've got our organizing out of the way. This went much quicker than we organized the Legislative Water Commission. So I want to say thank you for that.
throw a wrench in it?
No, that's all right. We can save that for next time. Okay, and then the next thing that we'd like to do is open up for commission discussion. And what this is going to be an opportunity for us to do is kind of start tossing out ideas and thoughts of where we want to go. Is what will happen is after tonight, we'll also send out an email to folks asking for their thoughts of what some of the bigger topics should be. And also starting to get information from people is who they'd like to be hearing from, what they'd like to see presentations on, and so that we can start assembling this list so that we can start making decisions as we go forward. So at this point in time, I know that there's a lot of interest. I've heard some of the issues already as going through, so I'll kind of touch on a couple of things I've heard, and then we can build on from there. I've been hearing about, number one is taking a look at the whole secondary education, trying to increase the workforce side of things, incent more people coming into that, working with the trades, taking a look at the fees. What are the fees that the cities are taking a look at. One of the things I've also picked up is densities. How do cities hit densities in the process? One of the things that was coming up a little bit we're hearing about was rehab of units. Another thing that I know that we've heard through here has been taking a look at the racial disparities that we have out there. How do we attack that and creating the space so that we can have the discussions in that? And I will pause at that point because I'm sure people have others. Representative Nash, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to put on there, I would like to see a presentation on what sorts of modernization in manufacturing that exist. I've got a friend and constituent who works in manufactured truss area, so would really think that would be valuable for us all. And I mean, we deal with a lot of exciting things down here. I think, we could add trusses to the conversation that we have. But let's get a presentation from folks who can help us better understand what is in existence and maybe what could we remove from hindrances at the state level to allow them to innovate. Because I know that there are some things that get a little clunky. And I think that all of us would agree that we want to remove those so that we can solve this problem.
If I could, to that, Chair.
Senator Graham.
Thank you. We had some tours that we took on my housing committee this last year. And then one new thing that's coming is there's a manufacturing facility being built in Owatonna that is going to penalize mainly apartments or hotels. And that would be kind of neat to look at what they're doing there. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's kind of getting more of that modular type of construction,
yep.
Build it offsite, and then just drop it in.
Yep. And then my other thoughts were, I think I sent you an email on the financing.
Oh, yes.
And how that affects people on affordability. And then tied to that would be tax incentives that hurt homeownership. And then, of course, the racial ownership gap that we've heard a lot about tonight, to look at some of the underlying issues, if it's a geographic location or if it's more statewide, because we know parts of Minneapolis are probably the worst.
Okay, very good. Senator Housley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
I would like to review Minnesota's energy code requirements for new builds. I think that's an issue that I've heard in what we do. That, and we also looked at that on Senator Draheim's committee. Also, zoning requirements. That I just to see how local governments are utilizing their zoning controls from lot size to home size, and how that affects affordability, and. Streamlining our agencies, coordinating our agencies, could they do a better job and be more effective and reduce the cost there?
Okay. Senator Herr, I'm Representative Herr.
I was going to say upgrade, but thank you.
No, two things real quick. One is that I know that as we're talking about each one of these topics, I want to make sure that we don't look at like a one-size-fits-all, and I would actually like to hear from different cities around the different challenges around housing, because I know like in a city like St. Paul where there's no more land really to develop on except for some few small exceptions, their zoning and permitting looks very different than somebody at another city that still has a lot of land to expand out to. So I would actually really like to get a landscape of like what's, because this housing issue is a statewide issue, maybe from what is rural Minnesota experiencing versus our suburbs, versus our cities that are sort of nowhere to grow left. So I'd really like to maybe see how we might incorporate that into some of the work that we're doing so that we're being very nuanced about how we're creating solutions for our state. And then the other thing, what I would like to see as well is that when I was working in the private sector many moons ago, private sectors were also looking at how they were going to develop housing as well. And I know that Wells Fargo, not from a lending perspective, but that they've invested, I can't remember if it was like $10 million or some large amount into like housing as well, but from the perspective of like some of the work that some of our nonprofits are doing within communities that have disparities. And so I would actually like to see what the private sector is doing around some of this housing work and bringing some of those solutions or efforts together so that we're not all working in silos, but we are actually building synergy off of each other's work. So.
All right. Wow. Fingers up all over the place. What I'm going to do is, because I haven't heard from Representative Haley yet, I'll jump to Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, being a border community that I represent in Red Wing, I'd like to hear more. You know, we've heard the statistic many times that you can buy the same house, you know, in Hudson, and it's cheaper than it is in Woodbury, as an example. So I'd like to know what are other states, and particularly, you know, the states that border us and those communities, East Grand Forks, you know, Red Wing, what are they doing that we can learn from? And maybe even just beyond, you know, our direct neighbors, housing is an issue all over the United States. Where are there kind of best practices where communities have solved this or advanced their housing issues, and who can we learn from?
Okay. And then...
That's what I had.
Okay. Okay, so you had that one too. All right. Let's see. One of the things that I... No, and we hit on it a little bit is densities for me is kind of a interesting one, because that can drive a lot of what happens. It can drive, if you can, the more density you have, the more it drives down your fixed costs and everything that come into it. But I think this is, we've got a great list to start with. We'll select from, you know, encourage other people to please to encourage to provide us with information. And what we can start doing is taking a look at the next meeting, Senator Housley will have the gavel at that point and start taking a look at what we're coming up with and start taking a look at what do we want to do for priorities, what do we want to do for also people who we might want to be able, or groups that we want to make sure that we're engaging in the process. I'm looking forward to it. I know this will be a lot of hard work, and sometimes it'll be fun work as we go through and address the situation. One of the things I noticed, we're getting up to close to 7:30 here, and I want to be respectful of people's time as we're in session, is I did want to give Senator Dreheim a chance. I know that we had talked a little bit about one of the bills on that you're possibly looking at. Is one of the things that we realized is, as the reports have come out, that cities have a certain report that they have to use to list the different expenses they have along with what the income is, and they break it in different parts, and some cities fill out one way. It's kind of confusing, and you can get different things off it. And to give you an idea, when I looked at the full report, in one version it looked like my city made a bunch of money on it. When you took a look at the other part of the report, it looked like it cost the taxpayers $3 million, and it just wasn't enough information to really get some good things going on. So I know, Senator Dreheim, you're working on that. I was wondering if you could just kind of update what's happening on that type of...
Sure. I hope I have the... Thank you, Chair. And I hope to have that bill draft back, hopefully to tomorrow, and I would love to share it with the group here. But, you know, for us, I think, you know, we need to streamline the process. We need to find terms, and I think we need a checkbox at the top that says, do I qualify or not? You know, right now, I think the number's $5,000 or less collected in fees, If you adjust that for inflation, it goes up to about $7,000. So that's one of the changes that we're proposing, is to move that up. And then kind of break out the different types of inspections. Mm-hmm. So that's another piece to the bill. And then kind of define terms, what's the, if you will, deductible, or what could count towards the overhead mm-hmm. to run that department. So I look forward to sharing it with you guys and getting some feedback. So hopefully we'll have that yet this week sometime.
Super. Well, thank you for sharing. I'm looking forward to it. I know I'm. You and I had a chance to talk a little bit about it, and I think that's a great place where, you know, getting some good consistent information and getting good definitions out there will help guide us as we go down the road and also shed more light. There's a lot of cities do the right thing on fees, and some, because of the looseness in it, maybe doing a little bit more than they should be. So that would help expose that a little bit more in an understandable way. So I want to say thank you. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could add to your list, I think given that we are talking about all of Minnesota, I would like to take some of our focus and add some outstate perspectives to this, because I think mm-hmm. oftentimes we will look at the metro area, and certainly that's where a lot of the sparks are happening, but I think it would be very interesting to see what the role of permitting and fees do for outstate projects as they are relative to metro, because anecdotally, from what I have seen, it's a pretty big difference. And I think that that's a valuable piece of conversation that we should have, so that if we're going to make a decision, and Senator Dreheim, you're sort of outstate, Representative Haley is reasonably close, but still outstate. And heck, in Carver County, I feel like we're outstate sometimes, even though we're in the 7-county metro. But I want to make sure that we're looking at that in totality. And then my second question procedurally for you and for Senator Housley as the chair is in the Blue Ribbon Commission that I serve on, the Governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on IT, our goal is to take the ideas that we're generating and move them towards some piece or pieces of legislation. I'm hoping that is not going to be dissimilar to what our efforts here are, because, you know, if it's just sort of a let's talk about the problem and then hope that somebody does something, that's going to be a waste of our time. I hope to hear from you that creating legislation that both sides of the aisle can support based on facts are really the output that we're seeking.
I can say that is my commitment, and this is coming off what we've done in the subcommittee on water. The first year or two, it took us a little bit to get the understanding in, and then we started generating bills. Last session, we had, I think it was 14 bills that were introduced, and 7 of them made it to the end. This current session we're in, we got a total of 20. So I'm going to say, careful what you ask for. We got 25 bills, and I got 14 of the jackets still sitting on my desk that just came in. So, I mean, it's one that we could also easily kind of get blown away with, which is good. There's a lot of good things. But then it's also trying to, how do we, you know, which ones do we tee up for now? Which ones do we tee up for later and set the stage type of thing? So I want to say that you've got a very strong commitment from our side here that we want to do that. I know that when I talked to, and I'll let Senator Housley continue. So if you'd like to mention here too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. Absolutely. I think it would be a waste of all of our time if we didn't do something productive with all of these hours that we're going to be putting in. So I would like to get some consensus on some bills so we can start making housing more affordable for Minnesotans.
Oh, thank you. And that's part of the reason, too, I had Senator Dreheim mention about the one bill he's got going, is trying to find some of the easier wins that we can have, start moving things forward now to build the trust on easier things that we're going to need as we get into tougher things. That's the model that we followed on the Legislative Water Commission, looking for some of the easier things and then spending the time talking on the hard topics and figuring out how do we navigate through there. And a lot of times it was not always just us sitting here, is we were engaging people, and instead of us sitting at the table, we had the stakeholder groups come in and we break into working sessions, and group A, group B, group C, group D, and they'd all have the same set of questions. What are the concerns? What are their thoughts? What are their priorities? So it was not just us setting the priorities, but having the people who are
coming here on a regular basis, whether they're lobbyists, whether they're from the cities, or if they're regular, if you're regular citizens. It's giving them all that opportunity. And I know from when I was talking to Senator Dreheim before on using that Water Commission model, that's a lot of what we were also thinking in that, is making sure that we're giving everyone the opportunity, everyone the voice to be able to come in and provide their thoughts as we go through it. And one of the things I do know is Reverend Dr. Jean Lee was not able to be here tonight. She left me a letter with a lot of things, and I'll have that sent out to the committee after tonight, but with a lot of her ideas too. And that's kind of what it is we may find that, well, we'll come up with the suggestions. We're going to hear from other people. And so I would encourage people who are out here watching today, people who are streaming us, is that as you have thoughts or ideas, this is all about us coming together, kind of taking what we've started in the past with the governor's task force and building on that as we go forward, and being willing to have the tough discussions and being able to do it in a way that we're always being respectful. And I want to say it's one of the things I've always valued on the Legislative Water Commission, is we've had some very, very good discussions. And what's great is it's not always partisan. A lot of times it's been more rural, urban, and then every mixture in between. And I think that's one of the things I'm looking forward to. And I know that when I talked to Senator Housley, she has a commitment to that too. And we want to make sure we're setting that stage as we go forward. I see that we're at about 25-2. We do need to set another meeting coming up. I'm thinking that I don't know if we want to try to do that now or if we want to do a poll to everybody. And so I will kind of open it up to the folks that are here who get to make the decision if you want to toss out a date, and then we pull people from that point in time.
Let's do it right in the middle of first deadline week.
Oh, I was thinking maybe Friday of deadline might be better, but no. Because one of the things I'm looking at is we'd like to try to meet monthly. So as we get into March, we're going to start be hitting deadlines through there. I will mention that month of May will probably take off. That's what we did on the Legislative Water Commission, just because we're in the throes of session, but that means we probably be looking at trying to do a meeting in March and then in April. So as we know that deadlines are going to be the last 2 weeks of March and the first week of April. So I'm speculating that our next meeting is either we're going to do it right before deadlines or we're going to be right into deadline week, and wondering how people feel on that.
The week of the 9th.
The week of the 9th?
Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, I'm trying to maintain my day job as well, and I do know that I have several speaking engagements that I'll be out of the state on. Could we maybe do this as a poll and not try to set a date right now, because many of those are a little fluid at the moment?
Okay.
But I do know that I have two firm ones in March, and I'd like to be able to figure out when I can actually make the time.
How about we do this as maybe for the poll initially, because as I'm hearing from Senator Dreheim, it'd be kind of quick. We'd probably be looking in about 2 weeks, as if we went in that week of the 9th through there, that's right before that first week of deadline, March 9th, and just kind of open it up and say, you know, let's open up all the days in that week and see what we get the best response on, and then go for that in 2 weeks. Do people feel comfortable with that?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
An evening meeting?
I'm open to evening meeting, or do you want to try to hit up Monday morning too? I don't know how people's travels are. And the reason I mentioned Monday morning is because I know that Senate goes in, what, around 10? Well, no, 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if early Monday works out for you folks or not before committees get up and going. And not being in the Senate, it's hard for me to say. I know in the House it's kind of wide open. Senator Dreheim or Housley?
Mr. Chair, how about if we focus on that first week and then Okay. Send out the poll? We'll throw out some times, morning and evening.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Is there any other business then from folks? Hearing none, I want to thank everyone for being here today, and we are adjourned.